Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart is an attorney who lives in New York. She is currently facing 40 years in prison because she's been falsely charged under the Patriot Act. She's been charged with materially aiding a terrorist organization. I want to say about Lynn Stewart that I'm really happy to meet you, Lynn, and I think, you know, I'm just waiting for that Patriot Act that I've been trying to let people know about come down, and I'm sorry it's come down on you, and I'm really glad that you're fighting it. And I know you've been an activist for social justice for over 40 years and started out a teacher and now have been an attorney for some time. And I heard you speak the other night here in Berkeley and say that you basically didn't have a case, and that's what it's that there was no case. And, of course, the Patriot Act is all about that. But you're going to tell us more about this police state and what in your own personal story. So welcome, and just get right into it.
Thanks so much, Sue. I'm happy to be on the West Coast. And as I've mentioned before in the past, if Ashcroft has selected me to be the champion of the true patriotic movement, that is to preserve the Constitution and freedom in this country, I'm happy to step up to the line, and I just want to make sure there's a lot of supporters behind me when I do that. And for that reason, I'm happy to speak out and talk about what I'm accused of and how it is really over the line of what we would expect.
And, of course, that's so important because obviously whatever happens to one person can happen to any of us. So it's really should be of major concern to all of us, even if we're not personally affected yet.
Right. I'm basically, my charge is materially aiding a terrorist organization. These terrorist organizations were designated by the government. They decided who was a terrorist organization. Nobody really even knows what the word terrorist means. A brave judge who served time in the Japanese internment camps about 2 weeks ago had a decision down in Los Angeles saying that the government designations were not done legally, that they could not stand up. Whether that decision will stand up or not in our current climate is the issue. And indeed, it is the current client, the climate of fear that gives us the most concern. Mm-hmm. I fear that although people are worried about civil liberties, most people have a sense that the foreign invader complex, that the government is so usual to pull out and use and to push all our buttons, somehow or other makes people afraid to step up. They actually will say, I think I better give you, if I'm going to support you, Lynn, I'll give you cash. I won't give you a check because I don't want my name to go on some list. Now, people who have come that far, you would think, would understand that it is about getting your name on some list, because if we're all on the list, they can't move. But if people that are supportive naturally feel that way, then we worry about the smaller people, the people we don't reach on a regular basis, and how frightened they are and what they might do if they're sitting on a jury. Are they just going to be stampeded by the government lawyers? So we're fighting an uphill battle at this point, but we think we can organize people, that Americans basically do love freedom more than they love safety, and that if they only understand that that's when we are strongest, We're not supposed to become the enemy we despise. Mm-hmm. So,
really, that's for sure. Well, I must say that it's occurred to me to kind of withdraw, but it's way too late for that, plain and simple. And for sure, what you're saying is true. The only way that we make a difference is by taking a stand altogether, and that's so very important. And, of course, us activists are kind of in the minority anyway, and we need people to understand, and hopefully this radio show will help some people maybe who don't understand. I'd like you to say, before we get into your case, and then I want you to talk specifically about what it is that they say you've done, mm-hmm. Lynn Stewart, mention about the list. I was actually going to go to that list on the internet because I know that this list of terrorist organizations is surprising. Could you share something about that?
They're basically under the website of the Secretary of State. It is actually they who are responsible for promulgating this list of dangerous organizations. Some of the organizations have protested. I don't know that any have been actually removed, but there are a great many organizations that are basically benevolent, charitable organizations that have been named because I guess their rationale, if you can call it that, is that if you're building a hospital in Egypt and you might take in a person who was someone who had fought on the side of the IG, therefore you're helping the IG. So therefore any contributions to this hospital are not going to be allowed.
What's the IG?
That is the Jamaa Islamiya. That is the group that I am accused of aiding. But I'm saying that their reach on this list is enormous, and I think for people's interest or self-interest, they ought to check out this list and see and make sure. I mean, I don't think you're going to find the American Red Cross on it, but I do think some of the entries are somewhat surprising. The Tamil Tigers, for example, who fought in Sri Lanka, they are on the list. It is an amazing list, and of course it's a list that changes as political times change. He who was our enemy, perhaps the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, might have been on the list, is now our friend, so now they won't be on the list. So it's very fraught with a lot of contradictions, this list.
And it's so important for people to think critically, and I find it quite terrifying, actually, to the extent that people, even like people who are usually like-minded, are not thinking critically because it's so easy to manipulate people by fear.
Yes.
And I myself find it very challenging to not get into that fear place, but it's really important because it's just like I'm just repeating myself, but it's so easy to manipulate
right.
people by fear.
Well, I think that the government understands that also. And I think to a large extent, the economy is doing a nosedive and people are distracted from that by people being arrested with dirty bombs, supposedly. Of course, all that information only comes from the government. But we're thinking more about going through an airport than we are about, will I have a job when I get off the plane? I think also that really our freedom rests in a mature, sincere analysis of why September 11th occurred. What position do we occupy in the world that would cause 19 young men to get in a plane? They weren't crazy. We know that. Perhaps they were devotees or idealists or whatever negative pejorative terms you might want to use for them. But what compelled them to do this? If we can't analyze that in a mature way, it will happen. It is doomed to happen again and again.
Well, I actually have a very different take on it. And I don't want to go into it now because we'll run out of time, but I do have a very different take on it, and I certainly think we need to analyze it and look deeply into it, and I think that the stories that are told are not the real stories. But one thing we know for sure is what has come out of it afterwards. You can't argue a lot about that because there's a lot of repressive legislation that is now on the books, not might happen sometime, but is already happening, and you yourself, Lynn Stewart, are a victim of it. So this is a good time to talk about your particular, the accusations against you and what you were doing.
when you say provocative things like that, Sue, I feel like I should be interviewing you. But anyway, my case is basically mostly tailored around one act that I am freely admitting to, that my client asked me to make a press release on his behalf, and even though he was under restrictions put upon him by the Bureau of Prisons, United States government, I did make that press release. My representation of Sheikh Abdelrahman began in 1995. He was accused of being part of a conspiracy, never committing any acts, which targeted, with the help of a paid informant, paid by the Egyptian government and by the American government, to target certain New York landmarks for explosives. The informant supplied the explosives, the informant supplied the safe house, the informant recruited poor fellows out of the mosque who really knew no better, and of course the sheikh was alleged to have been the spiritual leader of all of this. In the government summation in that case, they told the jury, you don't have to live in fear. Basically, if you're afraid of these men, you should convict them. Now, that is exactly what did happen. Everyone in that case, from the very top to the very bottom, was convicted, and Sheikh Abdelrahman ended up with life imprisonment. That's real life imprisonment, not a life sentence. We, of course, that's myself, Ramsey Clark, Abdin Jabara, his lawyers, and our entire team, the interpreter, the paralegals, continued to represent him through his appeal, which has ended, and also for other matters. He wrote a will. He left directions for certain financial things in his life, for his family. We handled all of that. And most importantly, we were concerned about his conditions. We brought one condition suit. We settled that one. We were about to bring another condition suit based on the total repression of his incarceration. He is blind. He is sick. He cannot read a book, for example. He cannot get a letter. He has no visitors. He doesn't interact with any of the other people in the prison, including the guards. He has no radio. He's not permitted a radio. He is literally entombed in a hospital in the middle of Minnesota. He's now been moved to even more repressive Florence, which is the maxi U.S. prison. We, of course, are lawyers. We take an oath to represent clients. We don't take an oath to obey the U.S. government if it interferes with that more important oath, which is to fully and fairly represent our clients. I made a press release. That was what the main gravamen of my offense against the government. They claim that that press release, which concerned a ceasefire in Egypt, aided the GI, the Jamaat Islamiyah. So, in recapitulation, actually, we feel the government case is not strong. There are certain other smaller things they allege which are really not important, and without giving a full detailed blow-by-blow description, we are going to fight this case. Michael Tiger is my lawyer. He's a renowned constitutional lawyer. We're fighting it because they used tapings of confidential attorney-client relationship conversations. They used telephone conversations between the attorney and the client. They invaded all of these places where the government has no right to have an ear. And as I said, right after being arrested, the question is not what was I doing, what was the government doing in this case? And we fully intend to put the government on trial. The Patriot Act, this wonderful 360-page document that nobody knows what it says, because it was the one that John Ashcroft said, if you're against the Patriot Act, you're in favor of terrorism. And it really cowed the United States Congress into passing it with a few notable dissenters. It allows them to do just about anything. Go back to the old days of COINTELPRO when they could infiltrate churches, mosques, Quaker meeting houses if the FBI thought that there was something there worth listening to. It also allows them to find out what books we purchase. So when you dial up Amazon, it may be that the government knows that you ordered that latest anti-Bush book, and they may not like you for that. They also are allowed to, just on the signature of John Ashcroft alone, tap your phone, tap your internet communication, tap your email, just on the, without a judge, without anyone passing, that you that there might be criminal activity afoot. It really tears apart the Constitution, shreds it, and says, we're going to run things here.
Can they also can go into libraries, right, and go and search your house when you're not there. And if you let anybody know about that, then that is itself a crime. To me, it's incredibly serious, and I don't think that most most people understand this. This was passed in Congress, right?
That's right. A few days, it passed early October 2001, shortly when we were all still in a state of shock, and Congress, too. And I think most Americans sort of say, well, I've opted out of that. I'm not part of that. They're not coming after me. But you don't know. Their grasp is so enormous. You may have had lunch with somebody at work, and that somebody may be somebody they're looking at. So then they start to look at you. They start to look at you, and they find out that maybe 20 years ago you marched on Washington for Vietnam, or you signed a petition at work because somebody was being fired, and they don't like that. So you go on an A list or a B or a C list. But we don't want lists. We're supposed to be free to do what we think on our conscience is right. And really, that is our great protection, our conscience, the right to be who we are and to favor those programs that we think should go forward without fear of the government.
And I must say that we know from history that there was a COINTELPRO, the FBI trying to wreck, actually, organizations that were independent, were in dissent of the policies at all. And if in a democratic country, the whole point is to be able to have dissent, as you're saying, Lynn Stewart. So I just figure that there must be even more of that now because the climate is different and the technology is so much greater. So it would be really stupid, even though I hate to look around and think, gee, which person in this meeting or which bunch of people are FBI agents, you know, it would be unreasonable. It would be stupid to think that's not what's happening. And what you said in terms of your own case here, that an informant, also so much of the violence and so much of the stuff that demonstrators and activists are blamed with is agents provocateurs in your own case. And I think most people don't understand about that. So you mentioned it earlier on that it was the whole thing was set up by informants and the bombs were gotten.
That is actually the Shakes case back in 95. In our case, it is basically a tapes case. They're listening in. And they're listening in, knowing that we believed we were not being listened into. But actually, the irony of the entire thing is, the ones they listened to, then nothing happened. Nothing was said or done during that time that in any way was made the gravamen of a charge here. So they listened in. They found out a couple of things. They learned how we operated. But really, they found nothing. Even Ashcroft admitted that. The main gravamen was this press release, which I had signed a paper saying I would make no press releases, not ever thinking that I would need to make a press release. But when I came down to make the choice, it was a joint decision. It was decided we had to do what the client thought was best. That's our job. We're not there to represent ourselves. We're there to represent a client. And he needed to do this. He needed to stay on the world scene. It was important to many people in Egypt who were waiting for this. And so we went ahead and did it. We then settled the matter with the government, went back to seeing the sheikh. And only 2 years later, when Ashcroft rides into town on his white horse, do I suddenly become indicted for the very, very behavior that we had signed off, and I had gone back to visiting and speaking with the sheikh again. So they're very two-faced about this. On top of everything else, there's a lot of government misconduct involved in my case, and we hope we're going to expose all of that and that it will become a showpiece for people to understand that this is not just happening to those radicals out there. This is happening to a lawyer who has, for 25 years, defended people, has become respected, has 7 grandchildren, and really does not deserve to be treated in this way. This is where the long arm of the law goes too far.
Right. And that's definitely the main point of all the listeners should take this seriously, because if it can happen to others, it can happen to you, no matter how far you removed you think you are. Would you talk a little bit, Lynn Stewart, about the folks in Guantanamo? I mean, the whole issue of not being able to be locked up without charges, without attorneys, and to be tortured while you're locked up, which is my understanding, is so the total opposite of what people want and think the United States is about.
Right. Well, it goes right along with the fact that the United States would never sign certain treaties. The one most currently is that they don't want to sign a treaty that punishes war criminals. And maybe we understand why when we see how they're acting. They put people on Guantanamo so that if you go into court, they say, well, we don't have jurisdiction over Cuba, but you do have jurisdiction over the U.S. government, we say to judges. There are two lawyers in L.A. who have brought a lawsuit on behalf of all the men that are locked up at Guantanamo. The judge there has said, you may not do that because you do not represent them. It has to be someone that is close to them, that knows them. You can't just come as a stranger and bring a lawsuit on their behalf.
I just wanted to make clear in case people don't understand. I think, 1,200 people locked up in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and there's something. It's way over 1,000, with no charges, no lawyers, no phone calls. And I understand being treated incredibly badly and supposed to come before a military tribunal. And really, the main thing they have in common is they have Arab names or something like that.
Well, I think what you have to look at is the ability of the government, the U.S. government, to characterize people, to give them a name, and then do what they want with them. In my mind, these men, if they were part of fighting a war against the U.S. government, then they're prisoners of war, and they should be accorded with the safeguards we give to prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention. But we have called them armed combatants, and because they don't wear a regular uniform with buttons and braid, they therefore aren't entitled to the Geneva Convention. They are talking to them endlessly, is my understanding. They are pumping them for information. They are keeping them in these metal tank sort of things, dog runs in 100 degree and more heat in the summertime in the Caribbean. Nobody is in contact with anybody that I know of. They're not permitted to write or call or anything else. But the most egregious is this young man, Padilla, who was arrested, and I don't remember his Arab name, but who was arrested in Chicago, which is so incredible to me. I really, even though I'm concerned about my own case, I really felt that that pushed the whole parameters a little further. Here he is. He comes in. He supposedly has something to do with a dirty bomb. That's based on some informant's information. He's held. He's held in prison. He's taken to a grand jury. He does not speak. He's taken to a U.S. attorney's office. He does not speak. It is suddenly announced, when they can't hold him any longer, that he is now an armed combatant. He has no longer any rights as a prisoner or as a person who is a defendant under our Constitution. And how he's a bad person, George Bush says. He's a bad guy. Yes, he has a criminal record. Like so many young men that go to jail, he found the Muslims to be the people he could trust in the prison, the people who taught him a new way of life. He got out of jail. He went to Afghanistan. And we don't admire that. But that is what happened. And now Donald Rumsfeld tells us we're going to hold him till he talks to us. Well, if that doesn't sound like torture to everyone listening.
And unconstitutional.
And unconstitutional. That's what it is. We're going to lock him up till he talks to us. Well, when is that going to be? When we don't fight terrorism anymore? Are we going to lock him up for the rest of his life? Nobody knows. He has no lawyer. He has no courtroom. He has no place to go. No place for relief. The only thing that can happen at this point in this country is that the people rise up and say, no. No, we're not going to allow this. People have to. That the courts start acting like courts instead of like followers of the executive branch. And if that can happen, then perhaps we can move this country back to center, back to where it's supposed to be, constitution under law.
So, Lynn Stewart, what have you seen, since you're in New York, I'm here in California, what kind of impression do you have about how things are going? Are you getting a lot of support? Do you find a lot more people are really concerned and in understanding what's happening to the that the Constitution is being shredded. Do you find more lawyers and political people willing to speak up?
Well, the legal community has been extremely supportive. I think we all understand that the underpinnings of all the practice of law is based on attorney-client confidentiality, that you can speak to your lawyer openly without any fear that anyone is listening in. And I am happy to see a lot of old warriors from the 60s who have maybe gone off to log cabins in the woods or come to Berkeley to live the good life, coming out again, realizing that maybe we're going to have to mobilize again, even if we have to use canes and walkers to get out there, we're going to get out there again, and we're going to demonstrate, and we're going to say no to the government. We're hopeful that we can keep up this effort. We have a great following in New York. We pack the courtroom every time we go to court. We want to keep doing that to make the government, the judge, everyone know, the press, the media. There is support. I'm not going to be isolated because they put a T on my forehead and call me a terrorist, that there are people who are saying we can look beyond that. And that is what I would ask everyone to do, to be critical. When you read these stories, think through them. Don't accept the government's position, and to think for yourself and to be a true American and a true patriot and question the government.
Really? Well, I I'm going to ask you, Lynn Stewart, in a second to give your contact. So I just want to let people know that that's what's going to happen and how they can support you. And I would also say, you know, let's have a little open hearts. I mean, you know, imagine to be locked up and you haven't done anything. You're the wrong color. You have the wrong kind of name. It's the kind of thing that goes on in other countries, and the United States acts like horrified. I mean, it's very unsubtle, but still, people feel scared, so they don't want to think too much, even as much as they could. So what would you like people to do, Lynn, and in the case of your case, and how do we reach you?
Okay, well, we're trying to build a full support network. Later today, we're going to try to set up a West Coast Lynn Stewart Defense Organization, which will, of course, be founded on helping me out, but also on bringing out the oncoming police state. We have a website, Lynn Stewart, that's Lynn with an E, Stewart, EW.org, where upcoming things and speeches and radio interviews, etc., television interviews are replayed. And anybody that wants to keep up with us, that's the place to go.
That's Lynn Stewart, LynnEstewart.org.
That's right. So that's really the thing to do. And the most important thing is that people should have a little honest indignation. And that is the true voice of America, is to say, we're not going to just take this. We need to fight back. And that's what I would hope. If only that can be accomplished. And I don't want to go to jail either. Yeah. But both things, it would be my lifetime in the movement that would do that, I think.
Right. And it seems they're trying to put you in prison for 40 years. That would just be horrible. And it's horrible for lots of people who are already locked up who didn't do anything. And we definitely, you know, I'm in support of you, Lynn Stewart. Thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you, Sue, very much for coming out today. I really appreciate it.
And my name's Sue Cipriano. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.